Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Tet Zayin Amud Bet. The Braita says, the Tanya, we have a Braita that says, Minayin the Boreach Shechayav Lashlim. How do we know that someone who runs away from being an Eved Ivri has to make up those years that he didn't complete out of the 6 years that he was supposed to work for his master? Now this goes back to the previous argument that we saw as to who is entitled to Hanukkah, who's entitled to the severance or to the rehabilitatory payments that the Adon gives to the Eved Ivri. So we know that there were basic categories where everybody agreed that he does get Hanukkah. There were two areas where we thought that there should be no Hanukkah, and that was with regards to the Boreach when he runs away, and Begiron Kesef, where he buys out his freedom. That was the Tanakama's view. Rabbi Meir says, Boreach ain manikin lo, v'yotzei Begiron Kesef manikin lo. If he runs away, he does not get Hanukkah. But if he pays his way out, he does get Hanukkah. And then the Gemara wants to understand what's the reasoning behind this. It says, that when you send him away, it's only in cases where you send him away will it be that they get Hanukkah, but not in cases when you do not send him away. And then the Gemara decided, Ramei Omer, that Boreach doesn't get, but Yotzei Begiron Kesef does get. And the answer, or the reason being, Boreach Hashlam Abay. Because the one who runs away still has to come back and finish off his years. If he finishes off his years, then he'll get his Hanukkah. But the fact that he hasn't finished his years is why he's not entitled to Hanukkah. The Tanya, now here's the Braita that we are speaking about. Because the Pasuk says, Sheish Shanim Ya'avod Uveshvi'it, it's a Lechavshi Chinam. So that's in Parshat Mishpatim with regards to the Eved Ivri, that he has to work for 6 years, and then the seventh year he goes free. Yachol afilu chala. It would seem that even if he gets sick, he would still have to make up the years that he didn't work while he was sick. Tamalomar b'shvit, yetzei l'chofshi chinam. The seventh year he goes free, no matter what. So here you have some sort of tension in the pasuk, one that says that you gotta work 6 years, the other one says that no matter what, in the seventh year you go free. So Amar Rav Sheshet, hachumai eskinan. So what's the case here in our situation? Kagon sheboroch upara pagabo yovel. It's a case where he runs away and then he bumps into the yovel. Maudetema, what I've thought, hoyova apikle yovel shiluchho mimach karinim bay. Since the yovel bumps into him and therefore releases him, so maybe that's called being sent away. Veloni kanse, and therefore we will not penalize him for running away. And we'll give him Hanukkah. Kamash Balan, that even though the Yovel releases him in this case, the fact that he ran away first causes him the problem, and therefore he doesn't get the Hanukkah. Rashi says here, Upaga bo Yovel, acharei ken lemacharat, on the next day. It's not that sometime down the road that he bumps into the Yovel. The next day the Yovel comes and would have freed him anyway. So he runs away a day early. In running away a day early, according to Rashi, he loses out on his Hanukkah because he's going free anyway, but it wasn't caused, or the freedom wasn't generated by his being sent away, but rather by his running away. And that running away lost him out the payments or the Hanukkah that is here. So now that's the way that Rashi learns it. If you look in the Tosfot Ri HaZaken, he says, "Upaga ba Yovel, Perish Rashi miyad l'macharat shibarach," next day. Param perish afopi shiborech yatzal lechirut choshekem impagabo kishechazar umashlim toelam ein achar yovel tashlumim. Param explains that even though when he runs away he goes free, and certainly if the yovel bumps into him, then he goes free. Even if he came back to make up the time to finish it off, he'll still go free with the yovel. From the Rambam, who has the shita that no matter when the Yovel comes, it eliminates the relationship and you do not need to make up anything whatsoever. On the other hand, the Tosfot Ri HaZaken brings another shita that you would have to make up the differential between the time he ran away and the time of the Yovel. Be'id demafarshe shebarach shana kodem Yovel. Ran away a year before the Yovel. Achar Yovel u'mashlim kama shebarach. After the Yovel, he has to make up whatever he ran away. And then he goes out after he makes up for that 1 year that has passed or comes up. So he has here, the Tosfot Ri HaZaken, a menu of what happens in this case of the Yovel. You have Rashi's interpretation, which is, it happens the next day. You have the Ram's explanation that when the Yovel comes, He is done. Done is done. Meaning that once the Yovel comes, there's no making up, there's no Hashlama anymore, because the Yovel frees him and he is gone completely. Then you have a third version where if the Yovel comes, it does release him, but he still has to make up the finite amount of time between the time he ran away and the Yovel. So the two main versions here in the Tosafot Ri'ah Zakein are whether the Yovel ends his relationship completely and he does no longer has to make up the time, or does he have to make up the time that he missed between the time he ran away and the Yovel? He doesn't have to make up the remainder of the 6 years, but he has to make up at least the time until the Yovel. Why does Rashi say that? Because Rashi doesn't want there to be any Hashlama. Rashi's giving you a case where there's no time to make up. So he's giving you a case where he ran away then one day, the next day, the Yovel came. So Rashi gives you a case with no Hashlama to say that, even though the Yovel released him, and he should have been, nevertheless, he loses out just because he ran away the day before. If you had a case of Hashlama, then you already have reasons to believe he doesn't get the Hanukkah, not because he ran away, but the fact that he hasn't finished his years is why he's not entitled to Hanukkah. From Rashi, it seems that you'd be midayeg, that's only because there was no Hashlama that he went free immediately the next day, and that's why he uses the Macharat, implying that otherwise he would have had to make up the time. Although, again, from Rashi, it's not clear, and here in the Tosafot Ri'ah Zakein, you have two opinions. If he runs away a year before, does that mean that the Yovel ends the whole relationship and there's no Hashlama to be done? Or do we say that once the Yovel comes, it tells you the finite amount of time that he's going to have to make up between the time he ran away and the Yovel? Those are the two views of what could be in that situation. Amar Mar, Yochal Afilu Chala, Tamal Omar, Umshvi'it Yetzei. Afilu Chala Kol Shesh. Sounds like even if he got sick all 6 years. Vatanya, Chala Shalosh, Vavad Shalosh, Enu Chayav Dashlim. If he worked for 3 years and he got sick for 3 years, then he doesn't have to make up the time. Chala Kol Shesh, Chayav Dashlim. If he's sick for all 6 years, then he has to make up the time. So we have a problem, because our Braita, the way that we laid it out originally, was if he's sick, he doesn't have to make up the time. If he runs away, he does have to make up the time. But from that distinction that we made, it sounded like if he ran away, he has to make up time. If he got sick, no matter how much time he got sick for, he doesn't have to make up the time. The Gemara is challenging in that because we have another Braita that says that it's up to 3 years. He has to have at least worked 3 years before we're going to say to him that if he gets sick and he can't work the remainder, that he is free. So Rav Sheshet, Boseh Maseh Machat. Case here is a case where he can do light work. He can do stitching, he can do some tailoring, and therefore he still is functional in doing some work, even though he can't complete all the work. So meaning in a case where he's sick for all 6 years, as long as he's productive in some way, then he doesn't have to make up the time. Now the Gemara goes back to the Braita itself. It says, Agufa Kasha. The Braita itself is difficult. Amart Chala Shalosh Vavad Shalosh Ein Chayav Lashlim. He's sick for 3 and work 3, he doesn't have to make up any time. Ha'arba Chayav Lashlim. But 4 years, he would have to make it up. And if he was sick for 4 years, he would have to make it up. Ema Seifa Chala Kol Shesh Einu Chayav Lashlim. If you're sick all 6 years, you don't have to make it up. Ha'dalit Ein Chayav Lashlim. But if it was less than 6, sounds like you don't have to make it up. So Achi Kamar, the Gemara rereads it and says, Chala Dalit, you get sick for 4 years, Nasek Amish Chala Kol Shesh. It's equivalent of being sick all 6 years, the Chayav Lashlim, you have to make it up. So whether it means literally in the 4th year, or it just means anything over 3 years, is not clear here. The Rishonim debate that, but the most likely explanation of the Gemara is, as long as you've done the majority in work, or you haven't done the majority in sickness, then you're fine. So as long as you did 3 years, or 3 years in 1 day of working, then you are exempt from having to make it up. And the other way around, if you have 3 years in 1 day where you're sick, then we're going to force you to make it up, even though you didn't hit the 4th year, because you went over the majority, and that's why you would have to make it up. So the assumption being that here he was sick, and he was an onus, he can't do anything about it, he couldn't control the circumstances, and now because he couldn't control the circumstances, we don't hold him accountable as long as he's worked at least 3 years or half of the time. So Tosafot now extends the question and says, they have these cases here. Yesh shayu rotzim lomar shodam schirim lamdei tinokot. In their day, they used to hire private tutors, individuals to teach the children. So they hired him. Imchalu chatzizman. What happens if they get sick? They were hired for 5 years, and they're sick for half the time, and they don't show up. Kamo kein lo yu mashlimim et zmanam. They don't have to make up the time. Kamu evri vri. Tahacha. Vitlu kolas chirut. Kevin shiwa nusin. They should be able to get full pay and be off because they were anusin. Wasn't their fault. You get sick, you get your sick leave, and the sick leave is up to half the time. That's what it's saying. It says vikashu. That doesn't make sense. Because the Gemara in other places says that a poel has a right to reverse his working in the middle of the day. He can walk away from the job. Obviously, he'll get paid for whatever he does. That's Rav's statement. And then we have another brighter Tanaic work that says that if a poel is faced with an emergency, like someone passed away or he got sick, then he's allowed to walk away. So from there, it sounds like the only reason you're allowed to walk away is because you ran into an emergency. If you didn't run into an emergency, you can't walk away. So now, Tosafot says, well, that's a stira between Rav's statement and the Braita. We could have solved that problem based on what you're saying here. In one case where he was sick or he was an anus, there he would get paid. In the case where he walks away and doesn't have an onus involved in it, he wouldn't get paid. That would be the difference between them. Gemara does not entertain that as an answer. That shows you that that's not a good answer to the problem. Being sick is not enough of an excuse to get paid. And therefore, the way that the Gemara answers is that when he walks away, in the either case, he doesn't get paid. The question is Yado ala tachtona or Yado ala elyuna? In both cases, he'll get paid for whatever he worked. If he leaves halfway through the day, he gets paid for whatever he did. He doesn't get paid for the remainder of the day. The difference being that if he's an anus, if there was some emergency to happen, then the Baal HaBayit just has to pay him. And that's it. He's done. The other hand, if there was no emergency, then the Baal HaBayit can get the work done at his expense. Meaning that he can hire other workers, and if it costs them more, he can take it out of that guy's salary. Or he can trick that guy and say, I'll pay you more and have him come in and then only pay him what he promised him originally. Meaning that you have more recourse against the worker when he doesn't do that. From that fact, Tosafot shows you, or says, it's clear here that anus, or being sick, is not an excuse to get paid. And you don't get paid when you're a poel. That's number one. So then it says, Imkeim alam deitinu kot nami imchalu lo yichu ela masher yivichu. What you worked, you get paid for. What you didn't work, you don't get paid for. Deinli dmotam klal evid ivri. Now why? The evid ivri gufau kanu eli adon. This is the answer to your question, which is that the evid ivri, his body, as we saw yesterday in Rava's Shita, is acquired by the Adom. Not only does he have the output of the evid ivri, he owns the gufa evid ivri, whether that's literally or like the Tosafot Riyah Zaken said that he's a mashkon, that his body is collateral for his work, but in the end, the Adon owns his body. And if he owns his body for his output, then he can only output what his body can do. And so the Adon owns him, but he can't do anything because here he's sick. So he has whatever the Adon owns cannot produce, and therefore you can't demand more of him. On the other hand, by the Sakhir is not owned by the individual who hires him by his body or collateralized by his body. He simply have a relationship by which he's owed the payments if he shows up to work. As long as he shows up to work, the Baal HaBayit has to pay him, has to pay this worker. And therefore, if he doesn't show up to work, he doesn't have to pay him. So the Evid Ivri is a different din than a Sakhir because of the nature of that relationship. The Sakhir is an arm's length relationship, which is, you hire him for a particular work, he does the work, he gets paid, he doesn't do the work, he doesn't get paid. In Evid Ivri, that ownership is much greater. It's not simply an arm's length relationship where you do, I pay, but rather he owns the Evid Ivri in a sense for his output. And then if the Evid Ivri can't output anything, what is he to do? Because the Baal HaBayit owns whatever the vehicle is for production, and that vehicle of production, it's like a machine breaks down. The machine breaks down, you can't produce during that period of time. Vod, nira delachalek ben malamed Evid Ivri, da Evid hecha dechalek gimel vav gimel hainu taima denu chayev lashlim. Now he brings another reason why there's a difference between an Evid Ivri and a Sakhir. So again, the first one being the difference in the nature of the relationship. Number two is, the Pasuk in Yeshayahu says, Mikzei Shalosh Shanim Kishnei Sakhir. The end of 3 years, the years of a Sakhir, of a hired worker, or, as Tosafot calls it here, an Evid Ivri. It says the standard period of time for an Evid Ivri is 3 years. And that's why it says in the Pasuk, in Dvarim, ki Mishne Sakhar Sakhir. He worked double the years of a regular Sakhir. 3 years is the regular time. He worked double because he did 6 years. So if the standard is 3 years, Mishne Sakhar Sakhir means an Evid Ivri stays around for 6 years, which is double the 3-year period. And therefore he says, Im kei matzinu de shanim de sachir hein shalosh shanim. V'ayinu tichtiv, and that's what the pasuk says in the Devarim, k'mishnei sachir sachir avdecha shei shanim. Hilkach, hiricha davad shalosh, haynu shnei sachir. If he completes 3 years, he's completed a cycle of a sachir. So mar, deinu chayev lashlim v'yitol schoro, that's why he gets paid. Kevin de avdo gimu shanim, deinu shnei sachir. He did at least one cycle of the shnei sachir, and that's why he'll get paid. So then again, he says this is unique to Eved Ivri, who has a term of 3 years that is out of the 6 years that is significant. He has two terms of 3 years, basically, was what Tosafot is saying. Based on the pasuk in Yeshayahu, the 6 years are actually made up of two blocks of three. And if you completed one block of three, then the failure to complete the second block of three will not make him lose out on his payment because he at least completed one block of an Eved Ivri. And so that's unique to an Eved Ivri. It's not applicable by Milam Dei Tinokot. So for that reason, Tosafot says that the principles established here are unique to an Eved Ivri for two reasons. One is this idea that maybe 3 years is a block of time that's significant for an Eved Ivri. And number two is an Eved Ivri is gufo kanoi. Those two reasons make it that an Eved Ivri has a special din that you cannot extrapolate to other po'alim, to other schirim, to other hired help, because they don't have those two character traits. Right now the Gemara says, Tarabanan, kama ma'anikim lo. How much does he get? What type of severance payment, rehabilitatory payments does he get? Chamesh slaim mikol min v'min. So they get 5 from each type. Shein chamesh esrei slaim. That is 15 slaim. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir looks at the pasuk and says that when you send them away, it says, do not send them away empty-handed. So how do you send them away? You send them away. Hanek tanik lo mitzoncha, umi gorncha, umi yikvecha. Those are 3 types of items. Each one you give him 5 sela worth for a total of 15 sela. That's Rabbi Meir's shita. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, shloshim kishloshim shel eved, gets 30 shekel, like the penalty for a shor mu'ad that kills an eved knani. The value of that eved knani is 30 shekel. That's the penalty that's paid then. That's the amount of money he gets. Rabbi Shimon Omer, chamishim kemechamishin sheba arachin. He gets 50 like the highest payment in Arachim, which is from age 20 to 60 for a male. That is 50 shekel. That's what he gets in terms of his severance payments. Amar. So now the Gemara is going to discuss this brayta. Chamesh shleim mikol min v'min, sheim chamesh esrei shleim, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir minyono ata leoshminon. Rabbi Meir is coming to teach us the math. Obviously he says 5 shekel from every min, we can do the math. There are 3 minim. Times 5 is 15. Why is he telling you? Oh, 3 times 5, which is 15? Hakamash v'lan. Mitzar hu delo mitzar le mihai minyona. He can't be less than 15. Be batzar le michad mina, batafi le michad mina, leitlan ba. But if he gives more than 5 sela of one min, and less than 5 sela of another min, we're okay with that. Meaning that the mix isn't as important as the total number. And that's what Rav Meir is coming to teach you. The total is 15 sela or 15 shekel HaKodesh. Teaching you that's the minimum you must give him. But he's telling you how he got to the 15 sela. He got to 15 sela because he took 5 from each of these items. He needed this to show you to get to the 15, but once he's shown you the 15, it's less significant, the breakdown of the 15. Better to do 5, 5, and 5, but you don't have to do 5, 5, and 5. Now, whether you need to have at least a little bit of each min is not clear here. It's possible that Rav Meir would require at least to have a little bit from each min, which is the shita of the Ritva. Or maybe Rabbi Meir says it just doesn't matter. You can give him 15 seller all from one min. The Ramban and the Rashba seem to indicate that you just have to give the total amount. You don't have to give all of these items or at least something from each of these items. That is not clear from the Gemara. My time of the Rabbi Meir, Yolif Reikam Reikam mi Bechor. He learns out Reikam Reikam Gzer Shavu from Bechor. How do you know 5 shekel at all or 5 seller at all? He learns that out. Over here it says, Lo tishachenu, it's a chit tishachenu chavshi meimach, lo tishachenu reikam. Don't send him empty-handed. In Pashat Kitisa, when it speaks about the shloshit migalim, over there, by Pesach, it says, with regards to bringing the bechorot, it says, bechol bechor banecha tivdeh, lo yira'u fanai reikam. You must redeem all of your firstborns. You may not come up and see me empty-handed. So the word reikam over there is juxtaposed to bechor banecha. A bechor is redeemed with 5 shekel, with 5 sela. Gemara says, Malalan Chamesh Shlaim, Afgan Chamesh Shlaim. So he has Reikam, Reikam is a Gezer Shava to teach you that you have five sela or shekel over here, just like the five shekel or five sela of the Bechor. Vema Chamesh Shlaim Mikulu. Why don't you say he has to give a total of five sela, broken down by these three categories? Why is he saying, oh, five sela for each category? It should be a five sela total. Just like when you redeem the Bechor, it's a five sela total. So to over here, it should be a five sela total. Iktiv Reikam Libesof. If he wrote Reikam after all the list, I would agree with you. Kedamar. Hashad Iktiv Reikam Bereisha. Since it writes Reikam first, Shadi Reikam Atzon, Reikam Agorin, Reikam Ayekif. The Reikam is modifying or qualifying each one of the items. There's a Reikam for the tzon, for the flocks. There's a Reikam for the gorin, for the grains. There's a Reikam for the yekev, for the press. So that's what the pasuk says. V'chi tishalchenu chofshi mimach, lo tishalchenu Reikam. Then the next pasuk is, hanek talik lo, mitzoncha, migorincha, migveka. So he's saying that the Reikam came first, is modifying the next three items that are mentioned in the pasuk. It says, melef, Reikam, Reikam, miolat riyah. Why don't we learn out the Reikam from Olat Riyah? Because it says, Lo Yera Ufanai Reikam. You're not allowed to come empty-handed to God. Those are the Olot Riyah. Because Lo Yera U, do not appear before me empty-handed. So you have Olot Riyah, which are korbanot for appearing before God. You may not come empty-handed, you must come with Olot. So let us say that the value that he has to use is Reikam, Reikam. We learn out of Olot Riyah. And Olot Riyah, according to the Mishnah and Chagiga, only have to be shtei kesef. They only have to be two silver coins. They don't have to be chamesh sela. So why don't we learn out of olot riyah? As Tosfot mentions over here, he's not even sure. How do we know the olat riyah should be shtei kesef? Says the Torah never says that. It's never clear in the Torah where you get that from. And maybe you should learn reikam reikam from Bechor. The two are found or come juxtaposed in that pasuk. Maybe you should say olot riyah should be the same price as a Bechor, which is five sela. How do you know that it's shtei kesef? In the end, Tosafot says, Yesh lomar, l'shem halacha l'moshe misinai hu b'choshu. Says that halacha Moshe misinai is that a kurban olat riyah can be any amount, or that it has to be shtei kesef, like a minimal amount. Now we learn out as halacha l'moshe misinai, we don't have anything that's directly learned out of the Torah. And when it says that, it's dvar Torah, olat riyah, shtei kesef, doesn't mean literally written in the Torah, but the Misora of the Torah Shabbat Peh, Moshe Torah Mechalacha Moshe Misinai, teaches us that. So Gemara says, Amakra, Asher Beirachacha Hashem Elokecha. When it says, Anek Tanik Lo, it says, Mitzoncha Migornacha Migvecha, Asher Beirachacha Hashem Elokecha Titein Lo. The Brocha that Hashem gave you. So you have to be of generous nature, generous spirit. So Asher Beirachacha Hashem Elokecha says, when I have a choice to give him more or less, I give him more. So over here, I could have learned Reikam to Olat Riyah, which says Shtei Kesef. I could learn Reikam to Bechor, which says five Sela, five Shekel HaKodesh. So which one do I pick? Asher Berachach Hashem Elokecha, the more generous, the Brocha side of it, so I give him the larger amount. Yehuda Meir, Shloshim, K'Shloshim Shel Eved. He pays out 30 like the 30 of an Eved. My time with Rabbi Yehuda, Yolif Nitina, Nitina, Mi Eved. So it learns out, a Gzer Shava of Nitina, Nitina. Over here it says, Asher Berachacha Hashem Elokecha Titein Lo, that you have to give it to him. So that's Lashon of Nitina. And over there, by the Eved, it says, Kesef Shloshim Shkalim Itein La'adonav. You will give to his master. So it says Itein over there. It says Titein over here. Zereshova, that this Nitina over here is the same Nitina as by Shloshim Shel Eved. Malalan Shloshim, Afkan Shloshim. And therefore he pays the Shloshim Shekel to him. V'neilif, nitina, nitina, ma'arachin. Why does he learn out nitina from arachin, which we're going to see is the shita of Rabbi Shimon? Malalan chamishim, afkan chamishim. Chado. Two answers to that. First of all, the tafasta meruba lo tafasta, tafasta mua tafasta. If you grab the larger amount, you may not have grabbed anything. If you grab the lower amount, then you might have grabbed something. There are different ways to explain this in different circumstances over here. Seemingly is taking up the version or view that subsumed in the larger amount is the smaller amount. If you take the smaller amount, you've definitely covered the smaller amount, and you are also included, or you are subsumed under the bigger amount. If you take the bigger amount, you might have satisfied the larger choice, but the minimal or the lower choice you have overridden and you have not fulfilled. So therefore, if you say pay 30 shekel over here, then for sure, if the right answer or the proper way to act here is to give 30 shekel, you did that. If the proper way was to give 50 shekel, then you still gave 30 out of the 50. So you gave a portion of what you were supposed to give. He didn't override it. On the other hand, if you tell him to give 50 shekel, so if he's supposed to give 50 shekel, great, so he gave 50. If he's supposed to give 30, now you made him overpay, and now he is way beyond. He's gone over. So it's okay to be under, it's not okay to be over. Or in essence, the mu'at is subsumed in the larger number. If you take the lower number, you are in a better situation. Vote. Eved mi eved, avalei the melef. It makes sense to learn eved from eved, even though it's a little precarious because you're an eved ivri from an eved kanani. But we should learn that. Shimon omer, chamishim kem chamishim shibarachin. To 50 like 50 by arachin. My time with Rabbi Shimon, gomar netinad netina mi arachin. He learns that exereshov of netina mitina from arachin. Malalan chamishim, afkan chamishim. So over here again it says titain. Over there it says that you have to give the arachin that you promised to give. Ema bepachot shibarachin. Who says he has to give 50? How does he know to give 50? There is a whole list of items that you can give arachin for. How does he know to give 50? Asher berachacha, Hashem lokechem tiv. Because it says you give him the bracha. So you're going to give him the biggest amount, not the smallest amount. The biggest amount is 50 shekels. So out of all the arachin you're going to pick, you're going to pick the most generous. So then, v'nelef netina netina mi evet. So ask him, why not you learn out netina netina mi evet? Malalan shloshim, afkan shloshim. Chado, the tafasta meruba lo tafasta. A good reason to do that is because if you take too much, then you bite off too much, you got nothing, versus if you take the smaller amount, you got something. Vote, evet mi evet, avilei menelef. The reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda Shita now is a question on Rabbi Shimon, why didn't he take up that position? Rabbi Shimon, Micha Gamar. He has another Gzer Shava. It's not Netina Netina that he learned, but rather Gzer Shava of Mach. By the case of Eved Ivri, Sefer Vayikra, it says, V'chi Yamuch Achicha Imach. If he falls on hard times, and he sells himself as an Eved Ivri. By Parashat Erechim, it says, Imach Me'erkecha. If he cannot pay off the Erechim, he's too poor, or he has not enough money to pay it off. The word Mach is used over there. So he uses Gzer Shava, Micha, Mich, or Mach, Mach. That teaches you the Gzer Shava. He no longer uses Netina, Netina, so it's not a question. He couldn't have learned Netina, Netina to Eved Kanani because he doesn't have that Gzer Shava. Rashi over here launches into a more philosophical discussion about Gzer Shavot in general. That you only let out Gzer Shava that you have from your Rebbe. You can't just make up a Gzer Shava. So originally he thought his Gzer Shava from his Rebbe was Netina, Netina. And then from that you can ask the question, what was the direction of that Netina, Netina? But once you've established already that he has mach mach was the gzer shava, you can't ask on him why doesn't he have netina netina because he doesn't have that gzer shava. He doesn't have that type of gzer. He only has a gzer shava mach mach. Once he has that, the question is no longer relevant. It might have been logical if he had netina netina, but he doesn't have that misora. His misora was for mach mach being the gzer shava and not netina netina. Now Tosafot raises your question, which is let us look at Rabbi Yehuda Shita now. Yehuda Shita says, I have a choice here to pick whether he pays the 30 of Eved or the 50 of Arachin. So he said, tafasta mu'at, tafasta, tafasta meruba, lo tafasta. So take the lower amount. But yet we also have the offsetting pasuk, which is Asher barachacho, Hashem elokecha. Asher barachacha, Hashem elokecha, that Hashem blessed you with. So why don't you give the larger amount? That's what Rabbi Shimon uses it for, to say you pay the highest of Arachin. That's what Rabbi Meir uses it for, to teach me that when it comes to the choice between Bechor and Olat Riyah, I pick Bechor. So why don't we say the same thing to Rabbi Yehuda? If you're coming to choose now between the smaller amount and the bigger amount, you should use Asher Berachacha, Hashem Elokecha, Titen Lo. They should give the larger amount. So Tosafot over here differentiates between these cases. When you have a single limud and you have two choices of how to explain that limud, then I will go with the larger amount. In the case of Rabbi Meir, I have Reikam, Reikam. So once I have established that Reikam is the limud, now I have two ways to explain Reikam. Reikam can be Bechor, Reikam could be Olat Riyah. I picked Bechor because it says Asher Berachacha, Hashem Elokecha. By Rabbi Shimon, I have a limud that tells me that it is Arachin. Once I've established it's Arachin, I have to pick which of the Arachin. Then I use Asher Berachacha, Hashem Elokecha, and that will determine that I picked the bigger amount. The other hand, Rabbi Yehuda's decision is not between this and this. His decision is about the limud in general. He has two different limudim that are possible. Netina, netina to Eved, or Nitina to Arachin. And now he has to pick between those two. Over there, Asher Berachacha Hashem Lukecha does not govern. What governs over there is Tafasta Meruba Lo Tafasta, and that's why you pick. If you have to pick, when I have two possible Limudim, so then I have to pick between the two Limudim, then the mechanism of Tafasta Meruba Lo Tafasta is used. Now, once I've already determined which of those two is the Limud, then Asher Berachacha Hashem Lukecha becomes the decision within that category, how much do I give? And so that's why Tosfot says, Asher Berachacha Hashem Lukecha is not applicable or not relevant by Rabbi Yehuda, because it's not determining within a category how much I should give. It's making a decision between two possible tracks of Limud. There, that's not relevant. And that's what Tosfot says over here. Avahacha chad netina ktiv gabi evet, chad gabi arachin. Ve'en lo mar asher berachacha kaya amiruba. Dainu arachim. Im svora lo lameid mi evet. If there's a logical reason to learn out of evet, mishum tafasta mu tafasta. So he says you can't use it as a vehicle for determining between two different limudim. It's only once you have the limud in place, you want to know, should I give the maximum or the minimum of that limud? That will tell you to give the maximum. But to determine between two limudim, that is not strong enough to do that, and therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is not governed by Asher Berachacha Hashem Elokecha. Now, had he decided that it was Arachin, he would have learned that. Or now that he has Eved, there was different prices for Eved, then he would give the higher of those prices. But the truth is, there's only one price for Eved, which is Shloshim Shel, and that's what governs for him over here. So now the Gemara says, Bishlamo Rabbi Meir, Hainu Dichtiv Tzom Gorim V'Yekiv. Why does it mention these three items? Because that's how you determine how much you have to give. Without them, we wouldn't know how much to give. Elo Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Haitzon, Goren, V'Yekiv, Lomali. Why do you need these three items? What is it teaching you? They learn out the values you have to pay, not from these items, but from Gzerut Shavot, either from Eved Knani or from Arachin. It says, Ami Baile, Daniel. We need it for this brighter. Yoko lo yei manikim elamitzon goren v'yekev. I would think that you could only give from these three items. Minayin l'rabot kol davar. How do I know anything else? Tamalomar, asher berachacha Hashem Elokecha titein lo. So any bracha that you have, you have to give. Imkei matam lomar tzon goren v'yekev. That doesn't tell you why you need those. It just says you're not limited to those, but you can give anything you want. So then, why are they written? Lomar lacha, ma tzon goren v'yekev miyuchadim sheishnam bichlal bracha. They are things that have bracha associated with them. Af kol sheishnam michal bracha. So too, only things that have bracha. Bracha, in this sense, means, as Rashi says, that they are para virava. They grow. They expand. Since they grow, expand, they are subject to bracha. So you have to give them items that grow, make more, can be expansive. That is the possibility. Yatsu. What do we exclude from this? Ksafim. Divrei Rabbi Shimon. Shimon says money is out. Money doesn't grow. Money doesn't grow on trees. Money is a static amount. And that's what you're asking for. Why don't we just give him the money? The answer is because money, it doesn't have bracha associated with it. And the pasuk demands that you give him something that is associated with bracha. So you can't do that. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov Omer, Yatzul Pradot. You can't give him mules because they don't have bracha associated with them. Whether that's because they are animals that are deadly in their attacks. If they kick or they hurt someone, the Gemara in other places talks about that those are deadly kicks. Or Yatzul Pradot because they are kilayim. They are a mixed breed. And therefore, there's no bracha associated with them because they don't reproduce because of the fact that they are kilayim. Rabbi Shimon, pradot, mishabchan bigufayu. They may not be able to procreate or reproduce, but they are able to expand themselves. They grow. They get bigger, so there's bracha. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, ksafim, avid bu'iska. Money does expand and can grow. You do business with the money, and then the money expands. You can earn interest, you can invest the money. The money can also grow or expand. Bitzricha, and we need both of these. Did katav rachmana tzon hava mina balei chayim in gidulei karkalo. Had the Torah only on its own, then you would say that only living animals you can give. You can't give things that grow from the ground, plants. Katav rachmana goren. Therefore, the Torah wrote goren from the grains. We got up goren, avamina gdule karka in, things that grow from the ground, yes. Balei chayim lo. Katav rachmana tzon, therefore I wrote tzon. So you have tzon and goren teaching you both gdule karka and balei chayim are good. Yekev lomali. What do I need the Yekev for then? It seems completely extraneous. Lamar, the Me'ute Ksafim. So this is for each one of them. According to one, to exclude money, which is Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Lamar, the Me'ute Pradot. And according to the other one, Rabbi Lozer Ben Yaakov's opinion, it's coming to exclude Pradot. Yekev, yes. Ksafim, no. Yekev, yes. Pradot, no. That's the Girsa that we have in our Gemara. Why did it pick Yekev? Is because that's your standard. If you think about even in Masrot and the items that are mentioned, it's Dagan, Tirosh, and Yitzhar. It's one of the staple products or items that you would have Yekev. You're right, you could have mentioned Yitzhar, which would have been Shemen as well. But Torah picked Yekev, and that's it. Tosafot does not like the Girsa over here. Because he says, Miukasha, my Nakad Klal Yekev. How me Klalu Prat de la'el Matzina le Me'ute? I don't even need this. Goren and Balei Chaim and Tzon would have taught you that these items are left out. That you could have learned the Mi'ut from the fact that the common denominator between these items are the fact that they are Divrei Brocha. And therefore the Mi'ut should have been a derivative of that. You wouldn't need the word Yekev to teach you that additional item. That Pradot and Ksafim are left out. Why do I need the word Yekev here? And therefore Tosafot says, Lekach nira l'rabi d'gresinan, l'mar le'etuye, ksafim l'mar le'etuye pradot. Not the Girsa like we have, which is Yekev comes to exclude pradot, or comes to exclude ksafim, but the other way around. L'mar le'etuye ksafim. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, it comes to include money. L'mar, for Rabbi Shimon, le'etuye pradot, it comes to include pradot. It does what it says, it's because Yekev is like a miut achar miut. You have the miutim of Goren and Tzon, and then you have another miut afterwards of Yekev that was unnecessary. That's a miut achar miut, elole rabot. And that's what it's coming. The Yekev comes to include other items. What does it include? According to Rabbi Shimon, it includes Pradot. According to Rabbi Elizabeth Yaakov, it includes Ksafim. And so that's how Tosfot's gira here is, Gisri is not le miute, but rather le ituye, is the rabot. Your question is, why doesn't the application of the Gzer Shelva for Rabbi Shimon and for Rabbi Yehuda apply to each one of the items? Why don't we say 30 times 3? Or why don't we say 50 times 3? The difference being the location of the Gzer Shelva. And that was noted already by Rabbi Meir. By the case of Rabbi Meir's Gzer Shelva, it says, V'hi t'shalchenu chofshi mi'imach, lo t'shalchenu reikam. The word reikam appears before, Hanek tanik lo mitzoncha migarncha mikvecha. Then the puzzle continues and says, Asher birachacha Hashem lokecha, titein lo. The titein lo over here is after the list of items. And so the Gemara makes a difference. If it's enumerated before the Gzer Shava, that tells you that the items are qualifying the price and saying that the price is multiplied by the items. Now that if it's found afterwards, it's telling you what the total sum is of all those items. What is the total of the Tzon, Gorin, and Yekev? The total is titein lo. That's what you're given. And the Gzer Shava is with titein, and then Netina is afterwards, so therefore it's a total number, not a number that you multiply by the items that are there. For Rabbi Shimon, who learns it out in the end from Mach, the word doesn't even appear in the Parshiyah ben Devarim, it only appears in Vayikra, so there's no association with the items directly, and therefore you would say it's a total number, because he doesn't have any modifier or qualifier of the number, because it's found in Vayikra, which is V'chi yamuch achicha. And over there's nothing mentioned about Hanukkah. Hanukkah is over here, so that's why he would not multiply it. Now the Gemara says, Tarubanan, Asher birachacha Hashem lokecha titein lo. Yocho nitbarech bait biglolo manikim lo. Lo nitbarech bait biglolo ein manikim lo. If things go well, meaning you're making a lot of money, then he gets a bonus and he gets paid his severance, his rehabilitatory payments. On the other hand, if the house no better than when he came in, nothing's going well, then maybe he shouldn't get it. Talmud Lomar, Hanek, Tanik, Mikol Makom. He has the right to this, no matter what. So, Imkein, Ma Talmud Lomar, Asher Birachacha. So then why does the pasuk have anything to do with your bracha? If it's, you're giving it him no matter what, that's an obligation, not because of the bracha. Hakol Lefi Bracha Titein Lo. According to the bracha, you should give to him, meaning, if you did better, then you should give him more. There's a minimum that you have to give him. He has a minimum severance of Hanek, Tanik, Lo, which is you have to give him this minimum amount. But if you did better than that, and your house was nitbareich because of that, you should give him, in addition, a bonus above the normal severance payment or the rehabilitatory payments that he's getting. And so that is, the bracha aspect is, what extra, or the bonus that you would give him. That's the non-obligatory part of the payment. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Dvarim kichtavam. You learn the Pashup Shat in the Pasuk, literally what the Pasuk says. I would say this is either like a similar version to Rabbi Shimon, who's Dorish Taima Dekra, who learns the reasoning in the Pasuk, and here the Pasuk gives you the reason why you're giving him this money, is because you got a bracha from him. Or you could say it that he's saying that the Torah, we go by the language of the Torah, we're not Dorish the Torah. Now that's not a general principle where we're not Dorish. Of course we're Dorish the Torah, but over here where the drasha goes against the pshat in the Torah, maybe there we don't make a drasha, and that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying. But he's saying, kichdavam, nitbarech bayit bigolo manikin lo. If there's bracha, he gets paid. Lo nitbarech bayit bigolo, ain't manikin lo. There was no bracha in the house during that period of time, he doesn't get paid. Okay, matam alomer haneg tanik. So then what about haneg tanik, which seems to me that you have to pay him no matter what? Dibra Torah, kalushon bnei adam. You can't make a big deal out of that, because that's the normal literary style of the Torah, that it says haneg tanik, either the double lashon, no matter what. So you can't make anything of it because it's dibrak lashon b'nei adam. Again, this is not necessarily a general principle that he subscribes to. It's just in this case where it goes against the pshat and the pasuk, he's going to say that we're not going to make a drasha on haneg tanik when it goes against what the pasuk is saying. If it was in addition to or enhanced the pasuk, and ochanami, we could darshan it. From here, there's no reason to darshan it, and therefore he takes the pasuk very literally. Again, how you determine what's considered to be a bracha or what bracha came, it's not clear over here. It seems here that it would be both subjective in determining whether he got the bracha and subjective about what you give him, how much you're going to get paid out in these cases. Again, and then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, he's still governed by the deot about how much you have to give. Meaning that once you've determined you get a bracha, then you go and look at the minimums that you give. Or literally, do you give him based on the bracha? He gets like a percentage of the bracha or some sort of payment. You could argue that it's the minimum according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and then you give more, but it seems to be that he says it's based on the bracha. So at least there you'd have to clear the minimum through the bracha that you got more than that minimum amount. Tarabanan, Eved Ivri ovedet ben, vein ovedet bat. An Eved Ivri whose master passes away, he continues to work for the son, but he does not have to work for the daughter. If there's no son and there are only daughters, then he doesn't have to work for the daughter. If her master passes away, she goes free. She doesn't work for the son or the daughter. No inheritor takes over that position. Someone who stays on as an Eved Ivri past the normal 6 years to the Yovel, or someone who is sold to an Oved Kochavim, an Eved Ivri who sells himself to a Goy, also over there, there's no continuation. The master dies, he goes free. So obviously we have to understand why in each of these cases. Where do we know this from? The Tanur Banan, the Pasuk says, Vavadcha sheish shanim, v'chiyim acher lecha achicha ivri o ivriya, vavadcha sheish shanim, that he will work for you for 6 years. So now when it says, Vavadcha sheish shanim, that's lecha velo lo yoresh, to you and not to your yoresh. Here you have a possessive form of the description of what he does. It says he's going to work for you alone he works, he does not work for any other party. And so from that we are going to learn that you work 6 years for him and then you're done. If he's not around, you can't work for him, you're done. But it says in Mishpatim, Shomer, Sheshanim Yavod, Uvashvit Yetzei Lechovshi Chinam. Over there, the Yavod is said in a generic sense. It's not in the possessive form. It means you work the 6 years no matter what. Hare the Ben Amur. So there already I've established that the son, he has to work for. Ha Nimim Kayem Bavadcha Sheshanim. Then what do you do with the Avadcha Sheshanim? Lecha Velo Yoresh. Teaches you not the Yoresh. So over here, Yoresh means anybody besides the Ben. It's a little confusing over here, because originally when it sounds like the Yoresh means any inheritor. That's Gemara's clarifying here is that you include the son, you exclude any other inheritor. So the Pasuk in Dvarim excludes any other inheritor besides the son. Pasuk in Mishpatim says that the son is still included in the work here. Ma Ra'ita, how do you know? The Rabot at Ben, Lo Tziyat Ach. And the closest other relationship is the brother. We'll see why. Technically, it's the father that's really the closest relationship in terms of inheritance. But you see why the Gemara picks the choice between the son and the brother. Why is it that you pick the son to be the one who fills the shoes of the father? Maybe the brother should fill the shoes of the father. Mirabe ani et ben, shekein kam tachar aviv, li'ada, ulustei achuza. Because the son steps into the shoes of his father with regards to Yehud. That's in the case of Amah Ivriya. The father, when he purchases the Amah Ivriya, can marry her. That's Yehud. Or he can marry her off to his son. Those are both equal options. So you see that the son has an equation of equality in some ways to the father that he can step into his shoes. And also by Steachuzah. Now Steachuzah is a little more complicated case. It's a case where you take the land that you've inherited. It's a land that you own through inheritance from the time that Bnei Yisrael entered into the land, and you're makdishit to Hekdesh. Torah prescribes at the end of Sefer Vayikra that you after you can redeem it for a chomer se'orim. You can b'chamishim shekel kesef. You can take out a chomer se'orim for 50 shekel kesef based on the number of years left until the yovel. So there's a fixed price for redeeming such a field. If that field, instead of you redeeming it, is sold by the treasurer of Hekdesh to a third party, you can no longer redeem it. It's out of your hands. So either you redeem it right away and pay it up and get it back, or if the goyim's buyer decides to monetize it and sell it to a third party, you're out of the picture. The third party keeps it until the yovel, and the yovel comes back to the goyim's buyer and is distributed to the kohanim, whose mishmar falls during the yovel. So that's true if you sell the field to an acher, to someone else. Over there, the Gemara tells us in Arachin that if you sell it to the ben, he's not called an acher. Why is he not an acher? Because he's going to inherit the field eventually. He is the in-line inheritor for the field, so he's not considered to be someone else by the field. So if the son buys it, it does not go out to the Kohanim and the Yovel, but rather either returns to the father or stays with the son, either way, depending on whether the father is still alive at that point in time. So you see that a son has the same status as a father in these two cases. In the case of Yehud, as well as the case of Steachuzah, which is just like if the father redeemed the field, it would not go out to the Kohanim during the Yovel. So too, if the son redeems the field, it will not go out to the Kohanim in the Yovel, which is not true of the Ach. That's not true of the brother. Adarabo, Mirabe Aniyat Ach, Shekin Kam Takaravi Chiv, the Yibum. Says, wait a minute, by Yibum, that's where a brother steps in and he literally is replacing the deceased brother, because the child that is born from that, he takes the wife of that brother, the child that is born is named after the deceased brother, and he literally steps in, he takes all his Yerusha, he takes his property. So you see that a brother does step into the shoes of the individual. So now we have a problem. We have a brother that steps into the shoes, and we have a son who steps into the shoes. Who's the bigger stepping into the shoes, or who's the bigger representative of the father? So, kolom yeshibom elemakum shein ben, where it says, not a good case, because Yibum only applies when there's no son. Right? If Hayesh Ben and Yibum, there's a son, there is no Yibum. What that shows you is the son is more powerful, or the son is more of a replacement of his father. The son exists. He already has stepped into the shoes of his father. You don't need Yibum. When the son doesn't exist, then you need the brother to step into the shoes of the brother, because the son isn't there to step into the shoes of his father. But that gives the son precedence. So when I said the time of the ikaha pircho, that's the reason why you're saying that we give precedence to the son of the brother. Halav alchi, had it not been for that pircho, that question, ach odif, you would have made the brother more important. Had it not been for this thing that without the, when the ben's there, there's no evil, we would have said that ach would have gotten precedence. So when I said, but typically the hocha tarte v'ocha chado. Why should that be? By the ben, he has two things where he steps into his father's shoes. One is yehud. Number two is Steachuzah. Over here by the Ach, he only steps into his brother's shoes for Yibum. That's it. So Mar says, Steachuzah, Nami Mehai Pirchahu Dekon Afkale. The truth is that Steachuzah comes from that same limud. That is, by Steachuzah, we have the same question. Who should be the non-acher by the Steachuzah? Should it be the son, or should it be the brother? So the Gemara makes the same arguments there. The son should be the one because Yehud. That brother should be the one because of Yibum. The Gemara's answer is, the son is the one and not the brother because there's no Yibum, but Makam Ben. So you know what? The same logic that's used here to say that the Ben gets precedence to inherit the Eved Ivri is the same reason by Steachuzah that the Ben is not called the Acher and the brother is called the Acher. So in the end, the answer is that you don't have two things. There's only one thing. Yehud is what gives the Ben precedence as a stepping into the father's shoes. Yibum is what gives the brother the precedence of stepping into the shoes. Which one is it? We don't know, except for the fact that Ben, no Yibum. When there's a Ben, there's no Yibum. That's what tells us in the end. Steachuzah is learned from that same logical argument. And since it's learned from that same logical argument, you can't say that it's two against one, because it's the same logic that brings you to the same answer. So that's right. Zanavgalei the Tana Klum Yeshibo Melamakum Shein Ben. It uses that same logic over there. And so really, there's only one against one. And the trumping statement is the fact that there's no Yibo Melamakum Ben, and that's the only reason that we give the Ben instead of the brother over here. Now Tosafot asks a very fundamental question over here. Why doesn't the Gemara use Yerusha as the method for determining who has precedence over here? Bim Tomara, my lo kamarle nachlad ben kodem leach. That the inheritance of the son comes before the father. When you're talking about the hierarchy of who inherits whom, the ben goes before the brother, and that should be determinant over here. Veishlamar de lo choshev elohanu delitnu baach klau veinu beben. That the real determining factor are institutions where the son has something and the brother can't do it at all. Or the other way around. Something where the brother can do it and the son can't do it at all. So by Yehud, the son can step into his father's shoes, the brother's not relevant at all. By Yibum, the brother can step into the brother's shoes and the son is not relevant at all. So those are areas where we say, wait, it gives either precedence to the son or precedence to the brother. In the case of Yerusha, they both inherit. The order of inheritance wouldn't be enough of a reason to tell us that information or give us who takes precedence. It's only because the ben knocks out the possibility of Yibum that is a swaying or determining factor in this case. How do we know this? In Dvarim it says, so too to your Amma you should do similarly. So the Amma Ivriya is compared to a Nirtza in that Parsha. Just like the Nirtza is not passed on an inheritance to the son and the daughter, so too the Amma is not passed on. It says, wait a minute. That's why you brought it down here? We need that for the Braita. It says, the Parshia in Devarim speaks about two things about an Eved Ivri. One is that he gets Hanukkah. Number two is if he decides to stay on, he gets his ear pierced. When it says, at the end of that Parshia, which one of those two things is it saying? Is it speaking about the Ritziah, or is it speaking about the Hanukkah? It says there that when the Eved decides to stay on, that's in Parshat Mishpatim, Parashat Mishpatim, it says, Im amor yomar ha'eved, ahavti et aduni, et ishti, et banai, lo yitzei chavshi. Over there it says, v'lo ama ivriya, because it says the eved says it, not the ama ivriya. Ha'ritziya amor. I know that that's not the aflamatcha kain. Hamane mikayim aflamatcha tasakain, la'anaka or la'hanik. That's what the aflamatcha kain is coming. But nevertheless, we've used it already. So how can you use it here to learn out that there's no passing of the ama ivriya to the children? Im kein nichtov kra la matcha kein. It just would say, af la matcha kein. Now when it says af la matcha taseh kein, what is the taseh eran shvamina tarte? That we can learn two things out. One is that she gets Hanukkah just like an Eved Ivri. And number two is she does not go to the Yorshim just like an Eved Nirtza. This goes back to what Tosafot asked at the end of yesterday's daf. Wait a minute. That parshiyah begins, chi macher lecha chicha Ivri o Ivriya. Over there it says Ivri Ivriya, they already compared, there's a Hekesh between Eved Ivri and Ama Ivriya. So why don't you want to have Hanukkah from that Hekesh? Why do you need Ba'af Lamatcha Tasekein? So Tosfot says, you would have thought that the Eved Ivri and Ivriya, the Hekesh there is only in the case where Sheish Shanim, because that's the case where the Hekesh is brought. In other situations where the Ama is released, maybe it would not have application for the Ama. That's why it says, v'aflamatcha tasakein, that no matter what, every instance where the Eved Ivri would get Hanukkah, so too the Ama Ivriya would get it. And that's what the top Tosfot on the top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph discusses why you need two psukim to teach you this din. We had a limud in yesterday's daf, v'chita shochenu chashim imach, lo tishochenu rekam. We said there that the word tishochenu was extraneous. And that's how we learned out that you give Hanukkah to all these different instances. So again, that comes to, had you just had Afla Matchata Sekein, then maybe we wouldn't have learned Hanukkah by Nama Ivriya at all. We wouldn't have thought that Hanukkah or the Hichishel Tashchenu, the Ribui there includes Nama Ivriya, because we don't even know that Nama Ivriya gets Hanukkah. So you need both Sukim. Afla Matchata Sekein teaches you that Nama Ivriya Shayechet in the Parshia of Hanukkah. Once I have that, then the Tishochenu comes and includes more things. Had I just had Tishochenu, I would have thought maybe it doesn't apply to Amma Ivra at all. Or if I had just Afla Matchata Sakein, I would have thought maybe it only applies by 6 years, doesn't apply by these other instances. So if you use the Hekesh of Ivri and Ivriya, or you use the Lashon of Chita Shalenu Chofshi Meimak Lo Tishalchenu Reikam, both of those would have been limited, and that's why we still need Ba'afla Matcha Tasekein. So I need both Limudim to teach me that the Amma Ivriya is entitled to Hanaka in all of these instances. Alright, now, Nirtza Dikhtiv Ratza Aduna Betozno Bimartzeya Vavado Deolam. So that's the pasuk that's found in Mishpatim. Vavado Deolam, it works for him, but not his son and not his daughter. Nimkar Leovid Kochavim Minayim. How do I know this applies? It says, Amar Chizki Amar Kra, V'chishav Im Koneyo, V'lemlo Im Yorshei Koneyo. The right to redeem an Eved Ivri who sold himself to a Nachri. Over there in the pasuk it says that you have a right to buy him out. How do you do that? V'chishav Im Koneyo Mishnati Machrolo Ad Shnati Yovel. You calculate the remaining time until the Yovel where he would go free, and then you pay him the money. But that calculation, or that accounting, is only done im koneyo, with the one who purchased him, not with the son of the one who purchased him. That shows you that if the purchaser is not alive anymore, then he's no longer enslaved or subjugated. So now we move on to this interesting topic now. Amar Rava, Dvar Torah, Oved Kuchavim Yoreshet Aviv. Min HaTorah, a son, Omenovi Kuchavim, would inherit his father. Shinamar, that's why it's relevant to our Gemara here, because it means, V'chishav, Im Koneyu, V'lo Im Yorshei Koneyu. That you make the calculation with the buyer and not the son of the buyer. Michlau, Dile Yorshim. The fact that the person has to exclude the Yoresh shows you that the Yoresh has some sort of power here. He does inherit his father. If he didn't inherit his father, then why would you have to tell me that he can't keep him? The fact that the Pesuk says you can't keep him shows you that he has Yerusha excluding this case. And the fact that we term it here, Dvar Torah, might have two nafkaminot. One nafkamino is that if Yisrael is holding the money, he would have to disgorge the money and give it to the Yoresh. The other thing is, it might be subsumed under the dinim of Bnei Noach, and therefore it would be subject to the Shivat Bnei Noach, because the Torah prescribes it, and it would be subsumed under the halacha of dinim for the Bnei Noach. Ger et Ovid Kochavim. A ger does not inherit his parents who are Ovdei Kochavim. Eno mitivrei Torah, lo mitivrei Sofrim. Min Torah is not an inheritor because he's a ketinok shenolad dami. When he's converts, it's as if he's a newborn baby. He has no real relationships anymore. It severs the relationships with his biological parents. And that severing the relationship also takes him out of the parsha of Yerusha. But mitivrei Sofrim, midrabanan, we give him the right to inherit them. Tetanan. Ger be'ovid kochavim she'eshu et avihim. Ovid kochavim. This individual converted. He has brother that's not Jewish. And their father passed away. And now they're going to inherit their father. Ger yechol omar lo'ovid kochavim. The ger, the convert, can say to his brother, the ovid kochavim, tol ata avodat kochavim v'ani ma'ot. You take the avodah zarah stuff, I'll take the money. Tol ata yayin esech, you take the wine, v'ani peirot, and I'll take the fruit. Once they come into the possession of the ger, asur. Then he can't divide it up anymore, because then it becomes what's called chlufei ovedat kochavim. You're trying to exchange it out for ovedat kochavim. You can't sell ovedat kochavim, get the money. The money is asur. So face the money. If you think that it's midoraita, ki lo baoli rushuto, nami, if they didn't come into his possession when he's taking it, ki shakel chlufei ovedat kochavim, hu deka shakel. He's taking something in exchange for the Ovedat Kochavim. Because if he's a Yoresh Min HaTorah, what automatically happens is when the father passes away, the possessions of the estate are automatically entered into the possession of the brothers. They now own it, whether or not they like it, they own it because the Torah gave it to them and it's in their possession. Now if he starts trading with his brother, he's trading something that he owns. He has a partial ownership, a 50% ownership in the entire estate. Now, including the Avodah Zarah, including the Yayin Nesech. Now he trades that out. He's swapping out Avodah Zarah, Yayin Nesech, which you can't do and have the money be free and clear. So if midoraita inherited him, then there'd be nothing to do over here. On the other hand, if he inherits him midrabanan, then you can say that the Rabbanan set it up, that he can do it in this way. Ela midrabanan. Why did the Rabbanan do this? Gzeirahu David Rabbanan Shem Yachzor L'Suro. They did this in order to stop him from going back. We don't want him to be incentivized to go back to being a goy Because he became a Jew, he loses out on all this money and all this wealth, all this inheritance, this Yerusha. He'll have an incentive to go back and be a Goy now, because then he would have inherited his father. If he stays with us, he gets nothing. So the Rabbanan instituted that he inherits. Now, Tosafot makes 2 points here that are important. The first point is that the mechanism by which he's inheriting over here is not Breira. We're not using Breira over here, because he says, Ein lomar taima mishum Breira. We don't say that. Looking backwards, we say Uvrara Davar. Dim Kain, Afilu Baldur Shuto Nami. Because then if you're using Breira, then why should it matter whether they did the split before it came into his possession or after they came into his possession? What you end up doing in the end is Breira, and retroactively it makes it as if this was what he owned originally. So he says that you can't be working because of Breira, because then the Mishnah would not have made a distinction between whether it's prior to his getting it or after he's getting it. Ella, it's midrabanan. Hey mamru. They instituted the Yerusha. They tell you the rules of the Yerusha. And that's how it works over here. That's how Tosafot explains it. Other Rishonim, including the Ramban and many others, say that the reason you don't say Breira over here is because you only say Breira by one item. You don't say Breira by two items. The truth is we find out in Shas that we do say Breira by two items. So what you have to say is this Tana believes that you don't say Breira by two items. You only say it by one item. So therefore, Breira is not applicable over here. Instead of saying what the Bali and Tosafot say that Breira would have worked in the other case, they basically say that this Tana says that Breira is not applicable over here because you're dealing with two different items rather than one item. That's the first thing Tosafot says. The second thing Tosafot says, and raises old Rishonim raise the same problem, is what were they worried about? Chazer l'suro. Once he's a Jew, he can't go back to being Ovid Kochavim. Even if he decides to go back to being an Ovid Kochavim, it doesn't help him. Right? He's a Yisrael Mumar. It doesn't make him, he doesn't get the inheritance any more than if he stays a Jew. Because he lost his status, and his status can't go back to being an Ovid Kochavim. So what the Bali and Tosafot answer, and basically that's the gist of all the Rishonim, is that not that halakhically he will get the right to inherit by going back, but he will go back to using their dinim. That's essentially what will happen, is that he will go back to being an Ovid Kochavim, and then they'll let him inherit. They're not going to be governed by the Jewish law or the Jewish rules of Yerusha. He'll go back to being an Ovid Kochavim and claim that he's inheriting under the rules of an Ovid Kochavim. That's what Tosafot says over here. V'yesh lomar, she'yiteh liyot lo chelek Yerushat Aviv. He'll make a mistake to think that he's going to get his Yerusha, and he probably will get it if he's not under Jewish jurisdiction, and therefore he goes off the derech. So even though technically it doesn't help him, he will do it in order to get the money. So what Chazal didn't want it to be is that the money's a temptation for him to leave his newfound life. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a braid that supports this. B'med v'ar memorim kishir shu. That's when they inherited. About kishin nishtatfu asur. If they inherited, then they can split it. If they partnered, then it's asur. And that was what the Mishnah told us before, the difference between them. Oved kochavim et ager. What about a non-Jew inheriting a convert? Ager et ager. Or a convert at a convert, ain't a lo mi divrei Torah, lo mi divrei sofrim. You don't inherit not min a Torah and not mi divrei sofrim. So in a case where a father converted, the child did not convert, then the child does not inherit the father because the father is ki tinok shenolad adam. He's a totally new person. He has no biological relationships that remain, and therefore the son will not inherit him. The Ovid Kochavim is a son will not inherit him because there's no question of Yavzor l'suro here, because the son is the one who's inheriting, the father's the one who's passing away, so we don't worry about that. So therefore, the son doesn't get, there's no reason for the din d'rabbanan. Ger et ager, if the father and son converted, then the son who's a ger does not inherit the father's a ger, because even though they converted together, they're both two different people, their biological relationship has been severed by the conversion. So now over there, why don't we worry about Yavzor l'suro? The answer is because the father also converted. So going back to being an Ovid Kochavim is not going to help him over here because his father is a Jew as well now. So that's not going to help him out in this situation. That's not. Lavam ma'ot min ager. If you borrowed money from a ger, shenit gairu banav imo. Not only did he convert, his children also converted. Lo yakzir labanav. You may not return the money to his children. V'im yakzir. And if you give it back, in ruach hachamim nocha amenu. The chamim are not pleased with this behavior. It's a very strange terminology over here, and Rashi already jumps on that and explains it differently than normal. It doesn't mean that the Chachamim are going to be upset at you, but rather, klomar ein maksakin lo tova. The Chachamim are not going to pat you on the back and say, good job, if you do it. So it's not that they're going to be angry if you do it, but rather, you're not going to get any credit if you do it. You're not getting any benefit. That's the way that Rashi explains it. Other Rishonim take it literally and say that it's a problem to give it back, and we'll see why it's a problem in a second. Vatanyo. Now, here you can see already there is an Aleph of the Bach and an Aleph of the Gra, which tells you very strongly that we have a problem over here. And that's what they note. Both of them note over here, Tzarech Lomar Vatznan. That over here it says to say Tnan, and the previous case is the Tanya. The Gemara here mixes up the Mishnah and the Braita. The way that the version that we have in our Gemara, what we quoted as the Mishnah before from Shvit, is really a Braita. And what we're about to quote now is Tnan, a Mishnah. And so therefore you can see the Gra and the Bach flipping the Girsaot over here between these two items. You also have other opinions that say they both should say Batanya. That they both should say Atanya, and these are both Braitot, and we're not getting involved in the Mishnah. That's a little difficult, because you have an explicit Mishnah that says the same thing as a Braitot. Why would you quote it as a Braitot, not as a Mishnah? Everybody knew Mishnayot, not everybody knew the Braitot. But that you should just know, because it causes problems, we'll see in a second, about how to learn the Gemara, that our Gemara is quoting them in reverse. Atanya, Ruach HaChameim, no Chahanenu. It's a good thing when you pay it back, and we like that. Lokasha. That depends on whether he was conceived and born before the conversion. In the other case, he was conceived before the conversion, but only born after the conversion. In both those cases, he is not Jewish, but he's differently not Jewish. Let's say it that way, which is that when he was conceived and born prior to the conversion, he's clearly not Jewish completely. When he converts, he's converting as a complete Nachri. The other hand, where he was conceived before the conversion, but born after the conversion, he looks a lot more like a Jew. And therefore there's a problem. So the way Rashi learns this is, V'leidato b'kdusha, heicha d'leidato shel ben b'kdusha, michlap b'Yisrael gamur. He'll get mixed up with the regular Israel, and therefore we tell you, pay it back to the Yorshim. Pay it back to the Yorshim, because we don't want people to think that whenever they're Yorshim, you don't have to pay back your loans. So in a case where he was conceived beforehand, but then only born as a Jew, he'll get confused with an Yisrael Gamur. When you get confused with an Yisrael Gamur, we're going to demand that you make the payment there, and that's Ruach HaKamim Choma Nochamen. The other case where he's a complete Goy, they say don't, you don't have to pay it, you don't have to do anything. It's not going to get confused with a Jew, and therefore there's no obligation to pay the Yorshim in that case. That's the way Rashi learns it. Tosfot, on the other hand, says just the opposite. So Tosfot asks here, from the case of Isser Guria, who was the father of Rav Mari Bar Rachel, who was the grandson of Shmuel, that was born out of the marriage of Shmuel's daughter to her captor, Isser Guria. Rav Mari Bar Rachel was conceived Shelo B'Kdusha and born B'Kdusha from Isser Guria. So this is Mari Bar Rachel, and the Gemara says over there, that Rova did not want to give the money to Rav Mari Bar Rachel because he was conceived born b'kdusha, which would seem to indicate the opposite of Rashi. That what Rashi says over here, that case of conception shlo b'kdusha but birth b'kdusha, is more likely that you would pay him off. And Ruach HaKamil Chomacha Nocha Amenu, seems that the Gemara in Baba Batra is saying just the opposite. So the Rabbeinu Tam says, no, the cases are different. The case over here is a case of a loan. And since in a case of a loan, the ger did you something good, the chamim don't want you to be kafui tov. He lent you money. He did you a favor. The fact that you don't pay back is your shim, that's disgusting. That's a kafui tov. Therefore, you have to pay it back. In the case of Rabbi Barachel, Rova was holding the item as a pikadon for Isser Guria. And therefore, Rova was the one doing the favor. And Rova was the one who had to pay out the Shomrim and take care of it all this time. And therefore, he doesn't have any obligation in terms of Hakarat HaTov to give it back. And therefore, in that case, we say that it would be okay to keep it. And that the Ruach HaChamim would not be bothered by that. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam makes the distinction in order to protect this pshat of Rashi. And to say that the case of conception Shelo B'Kdusha and birth B'Kdusha is the case where we say that it's better to give it back rather than the case where he was a complete convert. On the other hand, Ve'eni rather Ri, Lechalek, that Ben Milve the Pikadon. The Ri says, I don't see that distinction between loans and Pikadon. And Nero the Ri, Lefaresh, Haruta, Shalobik Dusha, Veledotobik Dusha, Ein Ruach HaChamim Onkanocha Imenu. He learns just the opposite of Rashi, that in the case where he was conceived, shelo mikdusha, and born mikdusha, don't give it back to him. Why? Because karov liot Israel. He's very similar to Israel. Israel gamur. People are going to think if you paid him off to pay off the Yerushim, that he was a full-fledged Israel. And if people think he's a full-fledged Israel, what's the problem with that? The problem with that comes up with cases later on where he has other brothers that were born big dusha, whether the Yibum works. This brother will not be a brother for Yibum because he was conceived shlo big dusha and born big dusha. He's not a brother to the other brothers who were both conceived and born big dusha. But if you give him or you pay him back the money, it's going to make him look like a full-fledged brother. And you're going to treat him like a regular Israel. And that's why, Ein Ruach HaChamim No Chayimenu. And again, in that case, Ein Ruach HaChamim No Chayimenu means the Chamim don't want you to pay it. Not like Rashi says it's neutral, but rather it's negative. We don't want you to do this because it's going to cause a problem and people are going to become confused. On the other hand, in the case of a ger who's completely converting, where he was both conceived and born beforehand, he's a complete conversion, then to give it back to him is, it's a good thing to pay people back. You owe money, you should pay it back. So then, why don't they worry about it over there? Because there it's so completely clear that he was not a Yisrael, will not get confused with him being Yisrael. And therefore the Rebbe learns just the opposite of Rashi in explaining this Gemara. That might also relate, and again, to the change in the Girsa between the Mishnah and the Braita before, might influence the opinions, whether it's Rashi, the Rebbeinu Tam, or the Rebbe over here, depending on which you think is the Mishnah and the Braita, whether you think it's too Braita over here, it's possible to explain that that might have some impact on their opinions. Now, Rabbi Chiya Ba'avin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ovid Kochavim Yereshet Aviv Dvar Torah. That Ovid Kochavim inherits his father, Mina Torah. This is a Gemara that we saw in Nazir as well. Over here, we had one example, Amarova, from our Pasuk. Well, B'chishavim Koneyu, that we learned that. Now we have another source, which is Diktiv. Kirushal Esav Natati Ed Har Seir. Says that I gave Esav a Yerusha Har Seir. Gemara says, V'dilmer Yisrael Mumar Shiny. Who says that Esav is an Achri? Esav is really an Yisrael Mumar, meaning that he didn't follow in the ways of his father. So Ein Ochanami, he has Yerusha because he's really Jewish. Now, that statement in the Gemara is pretty amazing for a number of reasons, which is that Yisrael Mumar Shiny, first of all, indicates that the Avot have a status of Israel, and that their children are B'nai Israel. Already, that's one quantum leap that the Gemara is making or assuming over here, which is that Esav is Shayach to Klal Israel. So again, that's one huge Chiddush that would have implications, of course, in terms of marriage, in terms of relationships with certain Nachrim, which don't play out in other areas of Halakha. So that's one difficulty in calling him Yisrael Mumar Shiny. The second thing that you learn from here is that Yisrael Mumar inherits. Because over here you see that the Gemara calls Esav an Yisrael Mumar and says that he would be entitled to Yerusha because he's a Yisrael Mumar. And so based on that, they conclude that a Jew that goes off the Derech or becomes a Mumar is still entitled to his inheritance. Now we may not give it to him or we may not want to give it to him, but that stems from a knas or a penalty that we penalize him by not giving it to him, din derabonan. But min haTorah, he would be entitled to that inheritance. There are others who say that's not the case, but that by Yisrael Mumar, he is disinherited min haTorah because he basically left the pact. He left the brotherhood, and leaving the brotherhood, he's no longer subject to the rules of the brotherhood, and he's not entitled to the Yerusha min haTorah. And what the Gemara is saying over here, Yisrael Mumarhu, is not explaining why he inherited from his father, but rather why his children inherit from him. He was granted the right to give inheritance to his children because he had a din of Israel, but not that he was entitled to inherit because he was Israel Mumar. And therefore, say the Gemara is not conclusive about this issue that Israel Mumar is entitled to inheritance. Elamei Ocha, ki livnei lot natati et ar Yerusha. Because it says there that you may not take these lands or attack these lands because I gave them to the children of Lot, Ammon and Moab. They are the ones who inherited these areas. So here you have Yerusha. Rav Chiya Ba'avin, my time, although Amar Kirovo, why doesn't Rav Chiya Ba'avin use Rovo's Pasuk V'chishavim Koneyu? Why does he use the Pasuk of inheritance that is mentioned in Sefer Dvarim? Because Mikti V'chishavim Koneyu V'loim Yorshei Koneyu. You're making a diuk out of the Pasuk. That's not written in the Pasuk. It doesn't say in the Pasuk, work out the accounting with the father, but not with the erasure of the father. Rava, my time alo amar kerav chia ba'avin. Why doesn't Rava like the pasuk of Livnei Lot? Mishum kvodod Avraham shiny. It might be that the reason that they inherited it is because of kavod Avraham. That Lot was Avraham's protege, and therefore Lot is given special benefits or special privileges that may not be applicable to everyone. And out of the kavod of Avraham, they inherited that land, or they're given that land. Doesn't mean that all goyim or all nachrim inherit their father. So here you have in a machloket as to what is the source for the fact that an Ovei Kochavim inherits his father min haTorah. Whether it comes out of our parshia of Eved Ivri, when a Jew sells himself to a Nachri and we say v'chishavim koneu v'loim yoresh koneu, or whether we learn that out from k'livnei lot natati et ar yerusha, that we learn it out from the pasuk that bnei lot have yerusha, and that yerusha indicates that inheritance min haTorah exists for a Nachri. Okay, we're going to stop over here by the two dots on the top of Yud Chet Amud Aleph.